You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
High in the air. Brito back at the wall. Adios! Pelota!
That's the type of manager that I'd like to be, which is the same every day. They know what they're going to get. They're going to get energy. They're going to get accountability. They're going to get structure, and they're going to get support. And I'm going to bring those things to the dugout in the clubhouse regularly.
It takes hard work, and it takes humility, taking one step forward at a time, making one good baseball move after another. And I really feel like that's how we're going to get where we hope and intend to go.
You're listening to Bags and Brisby on Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode number 201 of the Bags and Brisby podcast. I am Grant Brisby. I'm here with Andy Baggerly. And Andy, 201 batters faced for Hunter Strickland in 2018. I say this less to mention Hunter Strickland and more to bring up the 2018 Giants because we're back.
Boy, yeah. If there's ever a road trip you want to just fling your helmet at and just take a big swipe at, that would be this one.
Yeah, this is it wasn't that long ago. It was a week ago where I really honestly thought the Giants' best plan was to stand pat, to not make any wild moves, to keep the rotation intact, to not go out and get Wilson Contreras. But if someone were to amble along like Pablo Lopez or a controllable player, Cedric Mullins, maybe that would help their fortunes now and in the near term. But I just don't know. I think this might be a sell kind of situation.
Yeah, so I guess the question would be, you know, they could still go out and find players that could help them beyond this season, players that have additional years of control. And maybe they could even use some of their major league pieces like Carlos Rodon to make that happen. So, you know, I maybe they could be buyers and sellers at the same time. I think they just have to try to use this deadline to their advantage. But if you're Farhan Zaidi or Scott Harris and you look at how this team is playing, and you never judge a team by its worst week of the season. The only problem is the Giants have had their worst week of the season twice now in July and haven't really been good outside of those worst 2 weeks either. So do you think that you can make this team competitive next year? Or are you in a situation where, okay, we're not getting the inputs we were hoping for from the farm. We are further, not as far along as we thought we would be. We need to take a more significant step back. Where do you think they are right now?
I am pretty pessimistic about next season, and I know that is a little fickle, considering that before the season, it was like, hey, after the Dodgers sweep, it was, hey, maybe the Giants still have a shot at the West. But I'll wear it, because you look at the roster player by player, who can you count on for next season that makes you say yes? That gives the Giants an advantage over their competitors for even the last wild card spot. Is it Joey Bart now? You know, you might be optimistic about his long-term future, but that's not a player you can say next year for sure. That's the one who's going to put the Giants over the top. Brandon Belt is going to be a free agent. Brandon Crawford hasn't shown anything this year. Evan Longoria. I mean, you can go down the list. Boom, 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 boom. It's basically Logan Webb, Duvall, and, you know, maybe if you're optimistic about Yastrzemski, Luis Gonzalez, but it's not a long list. And when you're trying to build a 26-man roster and you're naming off three players, four players, maybe even two players, man, that's a lot of work to do. And I just don't know if it can be done in one offseason.
Yeah, I was in the press box at Chase Field the other day, and Ketel Marte was at the plate for Arizona. And someone turned to me and said, do the Giants have anybody better than Ketel Marte? Would he be the best player on the Giants? And I didn't even have to think about it. I'm like, no, they don't have anybody better than him. He would be the best player on the Giants, which is certainly doesn't speak poorly of Ketel Marte. He's a really good player, probably a really underrated player, actually. But yeah, the Giants just don't have anybody aside from Logan Webb and Camila Duvall that you could imagine would be on the team in 3 years. So yeah, you wonder when they have to start making moves that are going to bring a little more stability. But you know what? I mean, I know you always say we're not here to talk about whatever you lead into. We're here to talk about the Giants. I mean, do we really have to this time? Do we have to talk about the Giants? What's going on in your life, Grant? What's happening with you right now?
Let's see. We got softball. I'm taking a little summer softball league for my youngest
daughter.
Tell
me all about it. I want to know every detail and talk about it for half an hour, please.
Youngest daughter pitched well through a few hard strikes. She's learning her oats. No, Annie, we have to talk about the Giants. We have to. I'm considering buying a few Miles Davis box sets, records, really nice ones.
Hold on.
No. We have to talk about the Giants. We have to talk.
I'm going
to
need some bourbon at 10 in the morning to get me through this then. Hang on. Let's see. Ooh. How about some Japanese whiskey? That might be nice to have. Okay. All right. I'll get myself settled and we'll talk about the Giants.
Yeah. Fine.
We're contractually obligated.
Contractually obligated. You know, I mean, it's funny because I really... When I looked at the Giants next season, I came to the conclusion less that the Giants needed to go and sell at the deadline to make up for whatever they're lacking for next season, and more like, hey, this might be their last shot. Let's push it in a little bit and see if they can get one more postseason before they have to do a ton of work in the offseason. And I still have that in my head as a possibility. They're still not that far from the wild card. But man, I don't know. I think the calculus would change if there were any faith that the Giants could promote, especially hitting prospects. If they could fashion hitting prospects into hitting major leaguers, then the whole calculus changes about what you can expect for next season, what you can expect for the next three seasons. Without that, this team is still very much a long-term mystery. They cannot get Joey Bart on track. Elliot Ramos has been a mess. You go down the line, and it's just a rough position for an organization to be in.
No, it really is. And you know, I do think they need to try to do something. And I thought about, you know, you've heard the phrase, fortune favors the bold, right? What move would you point to in the 4 years since Farhan's taken over? What move would you point to as a bold move? That is a bold move. They are making a big bet here. And I mean, they've made certainly some significant moves. But is there anything that they've done thus far that really made you say, wow, they made a calculation here and they are really going all in on that calculation?
Traded for Marco Scudero. Damn it. No, that's not it.
No.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I'm trying to go back. And, you know, the Chris Bryant was a very practical trade. It's not like they gave up Lawant Wade Jr. and Joey Bart, although perhaps maybe at this point that wouldn't have been the worst thing in the world. Yeah, I'm not sure if they have.
So, I mean, like a bold move would be if you were to, and I know we've talked about these names a little bit, but if you decide, you know what, Joey Bart is just not going to make it. He has a lot of upside still, but the bat is just not going to play on the major league level. If you've made that kind of value judgment, what if the A's decide they could fix him and you trade him to the A's along with maybe three or four minor leaguers, probably a couple good ones, and you get Ramon Laureano and you get Murphy from the A's, two guys who you could control for a couple years. Laureano's a plus defensive outfielder. You could move Austin Slater to a corner where he might be a plus, because obviously he's having some issues out there in center right now with making decisions throwing to bases. And then you could have Yastrzemski in a corner as well for as long as he's around. I think those are the kind of moves that they have to start to make. And otherwise, you're not going to be leaving people with much hope for next season.
Yeah, that would be to use Mark Craig on the other podcast, hates this phrase, but it applies. So everyone's going to use it. Thread the needle. And I think that threading the needle with players who are controllable, who are going to be on the team for at least a couple years at the same time, pretty solid bets to contribute right now and not maybe one day sort of situation. That might work. And with Sean Murphy, the last time I looked, he was hitting horribly. And now his OPS is 747. He is up there again. And he must have been really hot. So, and I'm not just talking about his backside. I'm just talking,
peach emoji.
With the bat, he has been doing stuff in July. Let's see. Yes, a 976 OPS in July. So that is a look. If I don't think Giants fans need to have their hand held when you're explaining how important a strong defensive field general behind the plate can be. And Murphy can be that guy. And he is a little bit, I don't know if he's wasted on the A's in their current situation, because there is value to having a veteran, reliable catcher behind the plate for a young pitching staff. He's kind of wasted on the A's. So they should be entertaining ideas. I think that's a good fit. I think that is maybe what they should explore, where you're trying to thread that needle, to use the cliche.
Yeah, I mean, go out and get people who, you know, and we know they're looking for defense. And Ken Rosenthal reported a couple days ago that they're looking to subtract their sort of largesse of DHs. And they got another one back with Tommy La Stella, although he did play third base in his first game back. And, you know, he went 0 for 5 and struck out to end the game in Arizona the other day. But you're seeing the frustration, man. I mean, Carlos Rodon lost it in the dugout. He kicked a bat that hit Tyro Estrada and people were ticked off at him. And it was tense in that clubhouse. You know, I didn't get the sense that people were like absolutely, you know, quitting on the guy or anything like that, or that there's total dissension in that room. But people are very unhappy, and in some cases unhappy with each other. And I don't think it's devolved into total finger pointing. But at some point, you know, especially guys like Rodon and Webb, who by and large have done their job and pitched very well this season, you know, they've pitched behind that terrible defense all year. And at some point, you're like, enough's enough. And Logan Webb had one of those moments, too. He was visibly upset that Brandon Belt wasn't playing on the line for a Ketel Marte double that got past him. And then David Peralta followed with a double that scored the tying run in the fourth inning. And that erased one of three Giants leads they had on the entire road trip. And they did not hold on to any of those leads at the conclusion of the inning in which they took them, which means they did not lead at the conclusion of any inning over seven games on that trip. So, yeah, you'd be totally frustrated. It's like you feel like you can't lose a lead. You can't make a mistake. You feel like you have to strike everybody out, because a ball in play is just, you can't trust what's going to happen behind you. And he looks to the dugout, Logan Webb, and he flaps his arms and says, why was he playing so far over? And I went up to Belt after the game, and Belt's like, yeah, you know what? He's right. Normally I would have been, and on that play, I just wasn't. I just had a bad game today. And that's what happens. So I don't know if their frustration is really at each other right now, but it's certainly with each other. And there's probably a difference using a different word there. But, you know, that's what happens when a team is going badly. And they're certainly tested right now. They're tested both internally and externally by what their opponents are doing to them. And this should be a relatively friendly portion of the schedule. You know, they had the Diamondbacks, a team that's, you know, under 500. They got the Cubs coming in. But the Cubs are hot. The Cubs are really hot right now. They're probably going to trade a couple pieces while they're in San Francisco. But, you know, Seiya Suzuki's back. He's hitting again. They got Nico Horner. They got some nice-looking young players. Morel has been exciting. So they're all of a sudden not a really easy opponent. Then you got the Dodgers at the rest of this homestand. We know the Dodgers are the Dodgers. But then, you know, you look at August, you've got the A's, you got the Pirates, you got the D-backs again, you got the Rockies, you got the Tigers. You know, the Twins are pretty good, but that's a pretty soft portion of the schedule. So the Giants still have an opportunity to turn it around. But boy, if they don't have a winning homestand, it's going to be really hard to see how it could happen.
Yeah, I go back to the Giants aren't this bad. And what I mean by that is the baseball they played on the road trip was some of the worst baseball that they are capable of playing. They did not, let's see, the closest margin of defeat was 2 runs. For the most part, it was 4 runs, 7 runs, 3 runs, 2 runs, 4 runs. They were losing, and they were losing handily in most situations. I know that they got the tying or the go-ahead run up to the plate against the Dodgers a couple of times, but no, they've been getting skunked. And even the very, very, very worst teams will win 30% of their games. They will win 40% of their games. The very worst teams in history will win a certain percentage of their games. So when a team is winning 0% of their games over a stretch, they should probably regress to the mean in a good way. I remember writing a big, long piece about the 1988 Orioles, who started 0-21, and that was not the worst team in baseball history. It wasn't close. It was just the most snake-bit team in baseball history. And that's kind of where the Giants are right now. They're not the most snake-bit team in baseball history. They're just the most snake-bit team right now. They could still win a few games, but you don't, if a team is capable of losing 7 games in a row like this, you probably shouldn't be confident going forward and planning on adding for this season, regardless on if it regresses to the mean or not. If you can lose 7 in a row, you're probably pretty bad. in some respects.
Yeah. And, you know, one big thing is I think last year they scored, maybe it was their most runs in any inning in the first inning. And this year they're not getting those first inning runs like they did last year. You know, we know that they're in the aggregate, they're scoring a lot of runs, but that's starting to level out quite a bit. But they're not getting the starting pitchers early. And that goes for, you know, the guys who are pretty good and the guys who aren't not so good. They're just not settling in and not scoring early. And that reminds me a lot of like the 2019 team, where it seemed like the first time through the lineup did nothing, you know, and it is usually tougher for a team to get to a pitcher the first time through the lineup. But that's been a real issue, is getting started. And it's something that has plagued them in the past. And it's something that has come up again as a big issue because, yeah, to your point, I mean, you know, there were three games at Dodger Stadium where they were, you know, tied or had the lead in the seventh inning or later. So it's hard to feel like you are blown out of those games. But when you never have a lead to protect at all, I mean, it really does sort of warp your sensibilities. And yeah, at times they were a big hit away, but they got to get that big hit early in games and have a lead to protect and set up their relievers the way they want and, you know, feel like they actually have control over the script of a game. And they just haven't had that. They didn't have it the entire road trip. And and obviously it probably couldn't have gone any worse. And they lost Evan Longoria along the way, who is a guy who, you know, has played well when he's been healthy and has brought some stability. So now you have no Longoria, no Crawford, Belt. We've seen that he's just not moving like he did, even at first base. And that's one of the reasons he needed to be on the line, is because he's just not able to move as well and made a big mistake on fielding that bunt as well, throwing the ball over the head of catcher Austin Wins, allowing two runs to score. So, yeah, it's just a lot of air has gone out of the balloon real fast.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Yeah. It is, first off, I just have to go back to that 2019 team that you mentioned, because I'm still mad at them for scoring a first inning run at the end of April, because that would have been the funniest statistical quirk, I think, possible. They almost made it through the entire first month of the season without scoring a first inning run. That to me seems impossible. That, like, like not just like an impressive statistic, but literally impossible. It's like standing on Market Street and saying, well, you know, statistically, I guess it's possible that a car won't come by today. No, you know there's going to be a car that drives by because it's a busy street in a metropolitan area. It just seems impossible. So I just wanted to give a shout out to the 2019 Giants for almost doing the impossible.
Yeah, good on them. Good on them. Wait, no, not good on them. That was terrible.
It's just wild stuff. Anyways, but I'll go back to you look at this roster and it's sometimes you say, okay, it's the defense. And I wrote yesterday about how you can fix the defense and how if you put a quality center fielder out there and you can shift Austin Slater and Yastrzemski into corner positions, now you turn a really bad outfield into an actual pretty good one. And that could help if you do this, if you do that. I just wondering if it's deck chairs in the Titanic. I just am not sure, and that might be recency bias because the Giants have been playing so poorly, and you know they're still you hit the buzzer. They're still X games, 3.5 games out of postseason position. I don't know. I just they're closer to the Diamondbacks and the Rockies than they are at postseason position, and that's not a good place to be.
And the Baltimore Orioles.
Orioles, baby. I mean, it's like I'm talking about trading Cedric Mullins, and that's the orange and black team that's going to surprise us here all the way.
I keep reading all of these articles about, oh, here are trade targets, and it's like Anthony Santander. So I'm like, no, the Orioles are good, man. Everyone's like hardwired, and the Orioles are a 100-loss team, And there was one national reporter who shall remain nameless who was like, I'm going to eat my shorts if the Orioles win 75 games or something. I forget. So he's probably in a cave somewhere where no one can find him. but I mean, that just goes to show you, man, you can never be too confident in a prediction in baseball. Baseball's going to make you look stupid. Things are going to happen that you do not expect. The Giants may win 107 games one year. Ha ha ha. Who could see that coming? It's just maddening. And you know, this is, I think this season is shaping up to be like the ultimate regression to the mean season. I mean, it is regression with a capital R in so many ways. And, you know, again, though, even though you go read Giants Twitter and it's like sell, 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 tear it down, they're terrible, they're still only a couple of games out. And the teams that they're chasing are not, you know, the 27 Yankees. So, I mean, I don't know, man. Stranger things have happened.
I feel like I have in my career not done one of those unforced, if X happens, I will do Y. And I feel like it's time for me to do that. And let's do this together. Let's figure out what are we going to do if the Giants make it to the NLCS this year? Like not even win the World Series, just make it to a chance where they have the pennant. I don't want to eat shorts. What can we do? Snort a line of wasabi or something? Like what can we do?
Wow. I'll let you do that. Let's see. What will I do? Maybe I'll just write a book about it. And, I'll call it Band of Misfits. That's what I'll call it.
Oh my goodness. No, I tweeted yesterday because I've been trying to stay off Twitter. I don't know if anyone's noticed, but I just, when I'm watching games, I don't have the urge to grab my phone like I used to. And here are my thoughts. Here's my stupid jokes. And it was when the Giants were doing well and when the Giants aren't doing well. I've lost that feeling, which is probably healthy for everyone involved. But I tweeted yesterday after the loss that the Giants need to go 59-5 to match last year's record. Will they do it? Time appears to be running out, but baseball has a way of surprising you. Very clearly sarcastic. I mean, look, they're not going 59-5. That is the joke. It's basically to show you that record. That is a record that makes you go, like, that shows you how, the difference between last year and this year. They would need to go 59-5 to match it, which is bananas. People still thought I was serious. And not only did some people think I was serious, some people were saying, yeah, you know what? That's right. Let's have a little optimism. And oh, bless them, because that is so pure. Baseball can surprise you. I don't know if this team has that kind of surprise left in them.
You know, I think maybe I would have a hunch that one of the reasons that you're feel less apt to tweet your thoughts on Giants baseball is because you are subjecting yourself to a what do you call the mud river of volcanic, like, hot, like a lahar, is that what it's called? Ooh, yeah, it's not just a river of negativity. It's a steaming lahar of negativity. You know, that's bad for the mental health. It is.
Those nattering nabobs of negativism.
I mean, even if they're right, or even if, I mean, you know, even if the comments are all justified, sometimes they can, you know, they can take it to a level where they get so personal, or it's just toxic, you know, and we're human like anybody else. I don't want to subject myself to a bunch of toxic negativity all the time. But it is funny how there are fans who are like, rip the team, rip this guy, rip that. Why is that going to make you feel any better? You know, I can write what happens. You can make up your mind how you want to feel about it. And very clearly, you feel the way you feel about it. So that's good. Good for you. You're the consumer. You're the fan. But this weird, weird sort of compulsion to want to have people rip the team, you know, it's like, well, you know, I'll just tell you what's happening and then you can make up your own mind.
One of the weirdest things that I have noticed is when something bad happens, someone will immediately be in my replies saying that it's Gabe Kapler's fault. And I understand that you might have disagreements with Kapler, with how he's handling the relievers, how he is managing his hyper fascination with platoons, his rigidity in that respect. I get that. But if you bring Casey Stengel back from the dead and doll him up like RoboCop to make him robo-manager, that's not going to help this team. That's not what's going on. I don't think it's a clubhouse thing. I don't think it's a strategy thing. That is the fascination. It's almost like I don't know. Maybe last year he got too much credit. He got the Manager of the Year award for 107 wins. Is this the pendulum swinging back? I don't know, but I just don't look at this team and see, it's a manager thing. Yeah, fix that and you'll have a great team. I just don't see that.
You know, do you think Gabe Kapler wants better players? Of course he does. Does he want better matchups? Of course he does. If he were to play this team straight up, you know, and play the same eight guys, they'd be even worse. They'd be getting slaughtered if he played Jock Peterson against lefties, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I think he's doing the best he can with what he has. And yeah, we know that his philosophy is in lockstep with the front office in terms of matchups, et cetera. But, you know, it is one thing. There was a funny thing happened. Josh Rojas of the Diamondbacks was on either the postgame show Tuesday or the pregame show Wednesday. I forget what it was. But he said, well, we saw what Gabe Kapler said about the Giants, you know, coming to Arizona and getting right. And that didn't sit too well with the guys and didn't sit too well with me. And I'm thinking, I was in LA and I was in every one of Kapler's sessions, and he takes great pains to say every series is important, every opponent is dangerous. I mean, he never says anything like, oh, this is a soft point in the schedule or we need to take advantage. He actively like backs away from that kind of talk. And he's like, you know, every game is important. He doesn't like traffic in that at all. And so it was some sort of game of telephone where somebody said something that somebody interpreted, and then that got to somebody and it got worse. And all of a sudden Gabe Kapler is saying like, oh, the Diamondbacks suck and we can beat them. I was in Kapler's office and I'm like, what did you say? And he's like, I have no idea. But you know what? He's like, hey, sometimes people need to make stuff up to light a fire. And so if they did, you know, good for them, whatever. But it just goes to show that whether it's even people in the game or fans, there is an implicit bias against this guy. There are people who just have decided they don't like Gabe Kapler. And all through the 107-win season, they stayed quiet and stayed quiet and stayed quiet. And now the knives come out when he's an easy mark. And I think that's just, I take it with a grain of salt when I hear, oh, industry source says Gabe Kapler's lost the clubhouse. There is probably a scout that just doesn't like Gabe Kapler and is just ready to say that just because that's the way that they feel. I mean, it's kind of a symptom of what's going on in our greater society, right? It's like anything that gives me confirmation bias, I'm going to absolutely latch onto and put my megaphone on and shout it from the heavens. So, you know, I try to really not make much of anything I hear that says, oh, Kapler's lost the clubhouse or Kapler's he's absolutely screwing this season up. I mean, he's kind of doing the same thing he did last year. Just the players are older, they're more hurt, and it's just not working. And you know what? It is a tougher task for a manager. That's when a manager has to manage people more. To get them to buy in when things aren't working. It's harder to get buy-in when things aren't working. So this season is a much bigger test for him. And we'll see just how this clubhouse comes through this season. But I don't think his job is in jeopardy at all. I don't think that there's any, I don't think there certainly are people who aren't happy with how they're being used sometimes. And, you know, when you're pinch hitting Brandon Belt for David Villar as opposed to Darren Ruff, you know, questions are going to be asked. And when there's outward shows of frustration from players, questions are going to be asked. But yeah, I would just caution to, you know, take it with a grain of salt, basically.
I don't want to speak for anyone else, but I make it a point to actively dislike people who are better looking than me, taller than me, and who could beat me in arm wrestling, which means that I actively hate about 95% of the world. So that's it's jealousy on my part. So I can just be upfront with that.
You know what? Don't sell yourself short. If you arm wrestle Gabe Kapler, who's to say? Maybe you could do a Jedi mind trick and you could beat him. Who knows?
Maybe that is the 59-5 of arm wrestling. Like maybe. Who right. knows? You know, arm wrestling has a way of surprising you. No, I don't know. I just he is an even keel. I just don't see what fire would do for this roster. I don't see what pushing the right buttons would do. Now, let me ask you something, because you have been around your share of clubhouses, and I don't want you to get into specifics about Kapler necessarily, but when you are in a clubhouse where the team has, where their manager has lost the team or is in the process of losing the team, Can you feel it? Is it as obvious as rain's a-coming, or is it more just like, I don't know if my knee's sore because I tweaked it or because rain's a-coming? Like, how obvious is it when a clubhouse has been lost?
I mean, it can be pretty obvious, and it depends. You have to be pretty clued in and know players, especially the veteran players. A lot of times the young guys don't know any better. You know, they're just there hoping they get an opportunity, and a lot of guys are happy to be there. But it's like any workplace environment. You're going to have some people who are the grumblers. You're going to have some people who there's one veteran player that Bruce Bochy had a nickname for. I won't say who it is, but his nickname for him was Icky Face, because he just walked around with an icky face. Oh, Icky Face isn't happy today, you know? So, I mean, that's going to happen. And I think there are times when there are a lot of players who are unhappy with Bruce Bochy. But the thing is, you know, I got to remind myself, there's a big difference between a clubhouse mutiny. And I go back and think about, like, when Terry Collins was the Angels manager and Mo Vaughn didn't come out for a fight in a game at, I think it was Kansas City. And it was just upheaval, and they were ready to mutiny. That team was ready to mutiny. Those are pretty rare. But, you know, situations where you have people who are disgruntled, or you have people who aren't happy with how they're being used, you know what? That's every workplace. Everybody has moments where they just don't like what their boss is telling them to do, or, you know, they have to, you know, suck it up and do something that they're not happy about. And, you know, there's a big difference between, you know, that and conflating that into something even bigger. And so, you know, I think it's very easy for us, especially in the media, to try to blow those things out of proportion a little bit. I just try to be as sort of level-headed about it as I can. And yeah, you absolutely need to write about that and cover that and sort of unearth that when it's happening. But for the most part, you know, there aren't a whole lot of teams that get into active mutiny situations.
Yes. Talk to me on Sunday when I'm knee deep in power rankings about my place of employment to see how happy I am as a writer for The Athletic, because on Sunday I will be power ranking all of the teams and trying to pretend like I have thoughts about the Marlins. I don't have thoughts about the Marlins. Do you have thoughts about the Marlins? Would you like to do the power rankings this weekend?
No, but I do have thoughts about the Marlins. In fact, I have several thoughts about the Marlins, because delightfully, I got to spend a couple of nice lunches this past week with Jalal Leach, former Giant, now Marlins scout. And we got to talk about the Marlins and even watch some of the Marlins game on TV the other day. And I would say my first thought is Pablo Lopez. Good. If you can acquire him, do so.
Yeah, I don't know if I have enough thoughts for a full column on that idea of the Giants should attack the next couple of years rather than this deadline or just next season. Yeah, that guy's good. That guy is good. And I think it's silly for the Marlins. I don't think the Marlins are that far away. I've been a pro Marlins writer all year, and I don't know why they're this bad. Jesus Aguilar is not doing so hot. Miguel Rojas isn't doing hot. Like, I can list out the individual players. I don't know. I think that they're closer than they could be. Maybe the Giants can get Steven Okert, though. That's my trade deadline prediction.
I'll tell you what, though. I know we're on time here, but the Diamondbacks, too. I'm a little surprised that they're as many games under 500 as they are. And they're obviously creeping up on the Giants now, but that's a team with some athleticism. And Zach Gallen's having a good year. Merrill Kelly's having a good year. You know, the bullpen isn't the greatest in the majors, but, you know, they've got a lot of guys who can flag down balls in the outfield, certainly better than the Giants can. You know what? I think that the Diamondbacks are moving in the right direction.
I will not shut up about how last year's Diamondbacks, that was not a 110 loss team. That just was not. It takes so much to lose even 100 games. It takes so much to lose 110. I do not understand that. Can the Giants lose 110 this year? Let me see the math on that. I think that they can barely, if they don't win another game, they're going to be close.
Okay. Well, something to watch then.
All right. This has been episode 201 of the Bags and Brisbee podcast. We're going to be back on Monday, and we will have a clearer picture of if the Giants are buying or selling or buy selling or sell buying, whatever you want to call it. And we'll talk about it then. That's going to be the hot deadline edition. So see you then. Thanks for listening.